to Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois. This is the Closing Market Report. It's the 8th day of January 2009. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group. He's in Decatur, Illinois. In agricultural news, Monsanto says it doubled its fiscal first quarter profits year over year. The St. Louis-based company also noted it, along with partner BASF, has asked FDA to clear new drought-tolerant products for use in the next decade. And there are calls for the WTO to stay idle for the 2009 year. We'll have details of these and other stories shortly. At the end of this half hour, meteorologist Peter Levitt will join us to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. And of course, it all happens right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of WILL, that's public radio from the University of Illinois.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
In Chicago, on this Thursday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. March wheat at 612.5, down 0.75 cents. The May at 625.5, a half cent lower. In July, down a penny at 636.25 for the wheat pit. Kansas City wheat settled the March at 633.25, down 0.75 cents. From the corn pit in Chicago, 406.75, down 9.75 for the March. The May at 417.25, down a dime. July, 427.5, down 9.75. September at 437.5, down 9.75. And December corn at 450.25, down 10.25. January soybean futures, 989, a penny lower. The March at 989.5, down a half. The May at $10, down 1 cent. In July, $10.11, down 0.75. November soybeans at $10.05, a nickel lower on the day. January bean meal futures at $2.99, up $4. January bean oil at $35.52, down 40 cents. From the CME Group's livestock side, live cattle futures, February contract, $83.15, down 262.5. April futures, $86.95, finished $1.97.5 lower on the afternoon. And the Jan feeder cattle, $93.50, a buck lower. March contract at $92.25, down $1.12.5, or rather $1.02.5. It was the February lean hogs that were down $1.12.5 at $62.42.5. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from the University of Illinois. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. February crude oil trading 93 cents lower at $41.71 a barrel. Feb ethanol at $1.65.3, down 6 cents for the afternoon. Natural gas trading at $5.60, down 27.2 cents. The RBOB at $1.09.3, up 1.6. Heating oil, that's diesel fuel, at $1.52.4, 1.8 lower. Feb propane trading 71 cents is 6.1 cents lower. And gold futures are now trading at $853.90, $12.80 higher. The Dow Jones Industrial Average at this hour at 87.30 is just about 39 points lower. And the U.S. dollar, 81.59. down 0.67 for the afternoon. The CRB index at 227 is down just about 3 points, and the Goldman Sachs for the day at 347.32 is down 3.93. Here's what the weather forecast for the two-state region looks like from our own chief meteorologist, Ed Kieser. He says tonight in northern Illinois should increase in clouds. Some light snow there will arrive after midnight. In northern Indiana, mostly cloudy. A few flurries in central and southern sections, partly cloudy. Lows this evening, says Ed, from 10 in the far northwestern part of Illinois to 25 in the far south. Tomorrow in the north and in central sections of Indiana, cloudy, some snow showers. Elsewhere, a mix of clouds and sunshine. Highs across the two-state region tomorrow will range from 28 in northeastern Indiana to 50 in southwestern parts of Illinois. The extended forecast says flooding along the Illinois River and to a lesser extent along the Wabash will continue to recede as only limited amounts of precip are expected during the coming week. After a briefly milder weather tomorrow, a surge of colder air along the scattered snow showers can be expected on Saturday. Generally quiet weather expected on Sunday of this week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Risk Management Commodities, with offices in Chalmers and Lafayette, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities provides commodities analysis and recommendations for business and agriculture throughout East Central Illinois and Western Indiana. 866-837-9027.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report from the University of Illinois on a Thursday afternoon. Time to talk with Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Dan.
Hi, Todd.
It's been a very long time since you and I have talked. I think both Thursdays were Christmas Day and then New Year's Day. And the week before that, I was on the road with the Ag Econ team. So I think this is the first week we've talked in nearly a month. We have a lot to cover, I suppose.
It's been a while. The markets have done nothing but rally, though. That's a good thing.
Well, tell me about it from your point of view.
Well, we've had a pretty strong rally, basically, from early December. Now, this week, it does look like we've kind of hit some points here, some hard points on the chart. Probably corn more so than anything else. I mean, corn's had a couple pretty stiff down days here. We've had a couple dime losses. So the corn market at least appears like after 5 weeks of strength has kind of hit a point of resistance. We have seen a pickup of farmer sales. Some of the river locations and whatnot started offering $4 cash bids. So that did bring out a few bushels of corn. And interior Midwest also we did see a pickup. But we haven't seen no real massive pickup, but we have seen at least a pickup of cash sales. And I think that's been kind of a driving force here to a couple days of some declines. The other thing, though, the corn has a basic fundamental problem right in here is that export demand remains real weak. When you look at weekly sales totals now, we're actually only 52% of what we were a year ago. So export sales are down 48%. So that's a major major hit on the export front, and the ethanol grind continues to be mostly red ink, dependent upon, of course, it depends upon what fixed costs and variable costs are, but ethanol grind is going to continue to be relatively slow. So we do have a major slowdown in corn demand, and I think, you know, that is going to be a price-limiting influence here for now.
Price-limiting, but of course we're still at, I suppose, relatively good levels, and relative is in terms of long-term historical and historically taking a look at the marketplace. Are you thinking that this is a consolidation pattern that we're starting to enter, or is it, I don't know what, you tell me what you think it is.
Well, let's say the market doesn't have the undercurrent it had a year ago, and a year ago, the undercurrent was the need to maintain a fairly hefty, large corn acreage base to meet the expanding ethanol market. This year, we don't have that. I mean, a year ago, we had rising energy costs. Today, we've got declining energy costs. So, and then, of course, the higher prices this summer tore up a lot of livestock balance sheets, so we've got a lot of the livestock industry, poultry industry, repairing some of the damage that the higher prices of corn and soybean meal did to their balance sheets. So we do not have the balance sheets and the undercurrent for the market to so-called buy acres. I know everybody kind of talks about buying acres, but unless something happens real quickly on the demand front, we're going to increase carry out another 500 million bushels on the balance sheet, and we're going to get somewhere up around 2 billion bushels on ending stocks. And that would allow the market to see a 2 to 3 million acre decline in corn and not necessarily run out of corn. Now, and at some point in time down the road, if that would materialize in the corn market, would have to maybe go up and maybe ration supplies. But so the enthusiasm toward a winter rally this year, I don't think is there. In fact, I think we're vulnerable to price weakness as we go into the month of February, whereas last year we've had more of an uptick. So we've been 5 weeks up. I'm not too sure what Monday's report is going to say, but there's always room for surprises when you get into annual reports. But it's hard for me to visualize something bullish unless USDA really miscounted the numbers somewhere along the line. And I think once that's passed, then the market will, I think, will focus on demand for a month or two and farmer cash flow needs between now and March 1. And then it may jump ahead and start taking a look at what summer acreage levels may or may not be. And at this point, I guess my biases would be acres will be tough to hold steady and most likely to decline.
Would that give you hope that prices will increase then?
Well, to a certain extent, I think it tells you that it may hold sideways. I mean, right. We may be entering a period here of a trading range with $3 on the downside and maybe $5 on the upside. And right at the moment, we're kind of in the middle of that range here at $4. So I think, yeah. We'll have to kind of see how things, but we definitely need a pickup of demand in corn if we're going to propel this market to some higher levels.
That's interesting, I suppose, from the perspective that you're giving a trading range of $3 to $5, pretty wide at $2 on a trading range, but still well above historical averages, despite the fact that you're feeling that, you know, the livestock side is torn up, demand from the ethanol industry is weakening, and export demand is already weakened. So that sounds as if we're on the bottom side of a new plateau based on energy inputs. Is that
well,
right?
I don't like to use that word plateau. That plateau gets a lot of people in trouble, Todd.
Okay.
But, you know, yeah, if you talk to some of our fundamental traders here down on the floor, you know, they're totally puzzled why basically prices are where they're at, because, I mean, you just can't move product. And when you can't move product, if that's your job to sell product and you can't find anybody to buy it, you know, you're naturally going to be bearish. So, but the technicians, but they fully acknowledge that a lot of times the technical formations and technical systems might be signaling that fundamental picture may begin to improve some, but we just don't necessarily know what it is at this point in time. But I mean, if you, I do like the price action. We had a nice monthly reversal up on corn and soybeans and wheat for the month of December. So far, we've followed through. We've got some of our moving averages systems. We're starting to cross over. So the trend followers and trend traders and that kind of stuff that just look at raw price data is going to keep probing the long side. But in order for them to really make it work, they need some end users to come in here and start buying this product.
Tell me about the soybean side of the market. Have you been watching Argentina?
Yes, and soybeans, of course, the fundamental picture is pretty good. I mean, export sales are level with they were a year ago, so actually we're running better than what we need to run based upon USDA's balance sheets. The weather pattern has been persistently in South America on the dry side. Now, they do get rain in there once in a while, and forecasters continue to call for rain. But for the most part, we've gone long enough, I think, with a dominant pattern that kind of defaults to the dry side, that you're starting to see smaller production numbers come out of South America. And that's helped out the bean complex, and that's what's given us a fairly strong rally in the beans. And, yeah, we were down a little bit yesterday, and we do see kind of a steady here today. So you kind of view this correction that we're seeing in beans more of a consolidation. I would suspect that there's more likely to be a surprise in the January crop report on soybeans, because we do have relatively tight supplies as they are. So we're at 200 million bushels, and demand's been good. So if USDA would happen to come up with a little smaller crop, that would be a pretty positive influence to old crop soybeans here. Now, somewhere in here, though, the market will divorce itself, I think, and start looking at old crop supplies versus the potential of larger new crop supplies, depending upon how the spring planting season goes. But chart-wise, beans did go up and close that October chart gap here the other day. On the March beans, we had a gap up here at 1019, 1021. That did bring out some cash selling. We're right up against the 100-day moving average, and I'd say if the bean market can kind of hold steady in here for a day or two, I wouldn't be a bit surprised if we plow through those highs that we made here yesterday and take a run up into that 1050 and above level.
And finally, maybe within 25 seconds, 15 seconds or so, tell me about wheat. Could we see something in the USDA reports on number of acres?
We will, to my understanding.
That's
we
right.
will see winter wheat plantings, and I think that is going to be positive. I'm convinced that you're going to see a big fall off of winter wheat plantings, and I think that lays the groundwork for wheat to be a much more positive influence going forward here than probably what it has been over the past couple months or so.
Dan, thanks much.
Very well.
Dan Zwicker is with ADM Grain Group. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report. Happens each and every Thursday afternoon. Dave Dickey is here now. He'll take us right through the agricultural news for the afternoon.
In agricultural news, outgoing U.S. Trade Representative Susan Schwab says that negotiations on a global trade round should step back from the limelight over the coming year and focus on quiet confidence building. Schwab says that there are still a variety of irreconcilable differences that have prevented a new ministerial meeting taking shape, and that was at the World Trade Organization last month. Schwab, a key player in the faltering attempt to open up global markets for agriculture, industrial goods, and services since she took office in 2006, is due to stand down on January 20th with the departure of the Bush administration. Monsanto, the world's biggest seed maker, says that its fiscal first quarter profits were more than doubled on higher sales to Latin America, and it raised its expectations for the year. The St. Louis-based company says it earned $556 million, or $1 per share, in the 3 months that ended November 30th. That compares with $256 million, or 46 cents per share, a year ago. Monsanto reported strong demand for its weed killers in Brazil. It also made gains in sales of genetically modified seeds. Monsanto now forecasts an adjusted profit of $4.40 to $4.50 per share in fiscal year 2009, up from $4.20 to $4.40 per share. The new outlook includes only results from ongoing operations and does not include the effects of its purchase of a Brazilian sugarcane business. And Germany's BASF SE, BASF Plant Science, and U.S.-based Monsanto yesterday announced they are a major step closer to delivering the world's first drought-tolerant corn product to farmers. According to the two companies, the product has moved into the final phase prior to an anticipated market launch early next decade. They also reported that Monsanto has submitted the product to the U.S. Food and Drug Administration for regulatory clearance. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming at WILL Public Radio for the Farming World. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of this program, The Closing Market Report, and of Commodity Week. You can see both of those on our website at willag.org. Not only see, but listen to them at willag.org as an MP3 file, or sign up to have it delivered to your computer automatically as a podcast. It's all at willag.org. Now, up next, farmers are sitting down with the crop production and protection specialist from the University of Illinois this week and next. As we're out on our 6-day road trip, we like to call the Corn and Soybean Classic. I've been traveling along with them and filed this report on the in-rate calculator. It is the 12th time the Illinois specialists have taken the Corn and Soybean Classic series on the road. This year, like all the past years, more than 1,100 farmers and agribusiness professionals pre-registered for the day-long meetings. They come to hear about the latest field research results and, in the process, hopefully go home with more than a little paperwork. Things like how to access and use the in-rate calculator filled with data from Illinois and other land grants around the Midwest, says Extension Soil Fertility and Plant Nutrition Specialist Fabian Fernandez.
It is a regional approach across the Midwest, so several of the states in the Midwest have participated in this effort, and each state has their own data set that they use to determine the rates. So Illinois has its own data set. In fact, we have actually the largest data set out of all the states that are participating in this approach, and we have about 900 plus sites across Illinois, and we have divided the state into three major regions, north, south, and then central part of Illinois.
The in-rate calculator allows producers to input several of their own variables: the location of the field, the price of nitrogen, and the expected price of corn, and then calculates a profitable range of nitrogen application rates.
We take into account the economics. Basically, we look at the response of corn to that nitrogen apply, and then we use the price of corn, the price of nitrogen, to determine where the optimum return will be.
The online in-rate calculator is easiest to find by searching Google for in-rate calculator. Producers from Illinois and other states, for that matter, can learn more next week by attending one of the Corn and Soybean Classic series of meetings. The details, of course, are online. Again, search Google, this time for Corn and Soybean Classic. I host those meetings, so here's the list. Again, walk-ins are welcomed at $65 at the door. Arrive by about 8:30 a.m. Central Time. On Monday next week, we'll be at the Interstate Center in Bloomington. That's just off Route 9. Tuesday in Springfield at the Crown Plaza, right next to Stevenson Drive, right there on Interstate 55. And Wednesday at Moline at the Iowa Wireless Center. That's down by the river in Moline. And on Thursday, the 15th of January, we'll be in Malta at Kishwaukee College. It's not too awfully far from DeKalb and Northern Illinois University, but we'll be at Kishwaukee College Thursday of next week in Malta. Hopefully you'll get to attend one of those events and hear some of the 9 U of I experts we'll have on the stage with us, including Daryl Good and Gary Schnitke, Kevin Steffi, Mike Gray, Aaron Hager, Terry Niblack, Emerson Nafziger, and, of course, plant pathologist Carl Bradley.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
In 2 minutes here on the Closing Mark Report for a Thursday afternoon, we'll talk with meteorologist Peter Levitt. Stay with us and have a safe and a great afternoon. Back in 2.
It's National English Toffee Day. On this day in agriculture, introduced the idea into the manufacture of muskets for the U.S. government. In 1956, Greenleaf Pickard died, a U.S. electrical engineer. His invention of the crystal detector was one of the first devices widely used for receiving radio broadcasts. In 1997, Melvin Calvin died, an American biochemist. He was one of a team that used carbon-14 isotopes as a tracer to map the complete route that carbon travels through a plant during photosynthesis, starting with the absorption of atmospheric carbon dioxide to its conversion into carbohydrates and other organic compounds. The Calvin group showed that sunlight acts on the chlorophyll in a plant to fuel the manufacturing of organic compounds rather than on carbon dioxide, as was previously believed. And in 1998, Walter E. Dimer died, an American businessman. He accidentally invented bubble gum in 1928 while experimenting with recipes for a chewing gum base. By the way, the very first batch was pink, the color that remains to this day. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report from the University of Illinois. This is a Thursday afternoon. On the line with us, Pete Levitt, meteorologist, to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast, the Midwest, the region, and the nation, as well as the globe. Good afternoon to you, Pete.
Good afternoon, Todd.
It's cold here.
It is cold, and it's just starting to get cold, really. We had our last little breath, I think, of above-freezing temperatures earlier today, and now the temperatures are getting down in the 20s. They'll hover around normal for the next couple of days as a series of weather fronts move through the area, each one producing a little bit of light snow. I don't think anything really serious with the snow, but it'll get some snow cover down. But after each system goes by, colder air will filter in behind the cold fronts, and it'll get progressively colder. And then for next week, when we get into the middle of next week and then forward, we're looking at an old-fashioned winter-type cold. We're looking at temperatures in the single digits, some below zero readings here and there. It's all coming from a big air mass that's sitting up now along the Alaskan, Northwest Canada, the Yukon border. Temperatures right now as I'm speaking up there are between 53 below and 60 below zero up in there. And that's without a wind. These aren't wind chill temperatures. That air mass is gradually going to consolidate and move eastward and come down as a series of high pressure areas build up over it and shove the air mass southward. So very cold weather. That's really the principal forecast. And, of course, with these kind of temperatures, there's not much to say about agriculture. The question is, are any temperatures likely to be cold enough to damage crops, the winter crops?
Right.
That's possibly a case where if we can get a little snow cover down, we can help out a little bit and protect the crop. But just south of where that snow cover is, you get those kind of temperatures in there, and you're starting to think a little bit about winter kill.
Oh, that's pretty rough. I travel in northern Illinois next week, all week, with the Corn and Soybean Classic series of meetings. Sounds like we'll have cold traveling across that part of the state. Maybe if we look southward to Argentina and Brazil, we'll find warmer things?
Well, that happens. It's summer down there. And the Argentine, which has struggled with too much heat and too much dry weather, has actually been getting some showers in the west, and that's improving the agricultural situation in western Argentina. But wouldn't you know, when one place dries out, the other one gets wet, the other place dries out. And so they're getting a little dry in the east. So they're still struggling with weather, but Brazil further north is doing pretty well. They've had just precipitation whenever they've needed it. The temperatures have been very mild and not too hot. It's been a great summer season down there.
All right. Thanks much.
My pleasure.
Thank you very much. That's Pete Levitt, meteorologist, joins us here on the Closing Mark Report each and every Thursday afternoon. Stay safe out there. Sounds like it's going to get cold early next week. Stoke up the fireplaces. Make sure you've got plenty of LP in the tank to run the furnace, or natural gas all hooked up and ready to roll, or oil or whatever happens to be there, because you'll need it all of next week. I'm Todd Gleason. Have a great afternoon.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Mike Morris in McHenry at 815-344-7213. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.